The Hill newspaper reported that Donald Trump, together with RFK Jr., they're asking to have some sort of negotiations with Russians because of the tensions that are increasing that may lead to a nuclear war. And how is that serious in the conflict in Ukraine, in your opinion?
Well, look, I'm going to be as serious as I am. I've said this on other podcasts. I'll say it here. I just hope that everybody in your audience knows. You yourself, are you married? I don't mean to ask personal questions, but I know you have kids.
Yeah.
You love your family?
No.
What did you do this weekend? Did you take them out? Did you enjoy life? You know you almost died on Saturday. Do you know that? Are you aware of that? Or are you pretending it didn't happen? Because had Joe Biden signed off on the proposal that Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, brought in to greenlight the use of Storm Shadow cruise missiles and American ATACMS missiles against targets inside Russia, we'd all be dead. Because it would have triggered a nuclear war. The Russians said, from Vladimir Putin to the ambassador at the United Nations, to the Russian ambassador here in the United States, that this would be an act of war. In fact, the Russian ambassador at the United Nations, in session with the Security Council, said it will be a declaration of war. And I believe there was a back channel communication because all of that wasn't resonating. There was a final back channel communication, the content of which I don't know, but I think I know. And I think they said, these are the targets we're going to hit. And the decision's been made. If you do this, this is automatic. You can't stop it. That's why Biden was so mad. Did you see him at his when you get ready to meet with Starmer? Because he was ready. They were ready. They had it all together. Starmer brought the big red box with all the documents. They were going to sign off on this thing because Russia's bluffing. Russia's bluffing. Russia's bluffing. Russia wasn't bluffing. And someone said, what do you think about Putin's thing? I don't give much mind to Putin. Look at that angry old man. You know why he was angry? Because he was humiliated by the Russians. But this isn't about humiliation. What it's about is that a man named Volodymyr Zelensky has put political pressure on the United States, Great Britain, and NATO to allow him to do something that everybody knows will has the potential of triggering a nuclear war. And they almost did it. They almost signed off on it. We almost all died this weekend. Do you understand that? I don't think people understand it. 72 minutes is all it takes from the initiation of the first action to the end of the world. 72 frickin' minutes. Whatever the hell you were doing this weekend, you wouldn't have gotten to do it. I went to a movie. You wouldn't have gotten to see the end of the movie. Took my kids for a walk. They ain't coming home. Took my dog for a walk. You ain't coming home either. There would be no home. And if there is, the consequences of surviving the initial nuclear exchange are worse than dying in the initial nuclear exchange. Nikita Khrushchev said it. The survivors will envy the dead. I don't think everybody gets it. I don't think your audience gets it. I think they're just saying that, guys, we all almost died this weekend. It's the closest we came to nuclear war since the Cuban Missile Crisis. One stroke of the pen would have all been taken. They were getting ready to sign the freaking documents. Biden was lined up with Starmer. They had the paperwork ready. And it's only because the Russians said, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. We're not bluffing. And thank God, somebody close to Biden went, they ain't bluffing. They're not. And Biden made the right decision. But they're still going to talk about it. Now you're going to go up into General Assembly and talk about it. Zelensky's going to come here and talk about it. How much longer are we going to allow this insane man in Kiev to hold the fate of the world in his hands? When are we going to take charge and say, oh, we don't want to die. I want to go to the movies. I want to walk the dogs. I want to play with my kids. I want to live. Because that's what this is about. This isn't stupid academic parlor games with, you know, drunk people in the back room smoking cigars going, well, you know, the Russians are bluffing. Well, you know, historically speaking, blah, blah, blah. No, they're not bluffing. This is about America and Great Britain enabling Ukraine to attack Russian cities using weapons provided by the United States and Great Britain using targets developed by the United States and Great Britain, inserted into the weapon systems by American and British hands. People need to understand, ATACMS can't be launched. It's a GPS-guided system, GPS and inertial guidance system. But if it's GPS, commercial GPS, like we all use, well, maybe, Scott, I got a Garmin. Great. You got a single signal between you and the Garmin, and I can jam it anytime I want, and then you're stupid. You don't have anything. You have to use military-grade GPS. That's two signals. In order to make those signals work, they're encrypted. You have to be able to decrypt them. So there's a little device that gets plugged in there, and you have to load in the encryption. Only Americans and NATO get to do that. Part of a schedule published by the National Security Agency. So before each ATACMS can be used to launch, to make sure it doesn't get, that GPS doesn't get jammed, an American or NATO hand has to load up the encryption. That means that we're making this possible. That missile can't hit Russian territory without an American hand. And the Russians are going, that means you're attacking us. Literally, it means you're attacking us. You're a party to the conflict. With the Storm Shadow, it's even more. It uses GPS, again, that whole encryption thing we just talked about. It uses an inertial navigation system, but it also uses something called terrain, basically terrain following, TERRACOM. And this is maps made by the United States, only the United States, of the terrain maps with all the features. We block that in, and then we have to program in more refined things. This is all done targeting. We have a targeting cell. There's a name for it. I forget it. But we have them in the Pacific. We have them in the Atlantic. We have them in the United States. The targeting cell is responsible for different parts of the world. And what it does is, if you want to hit a target, it will then do a couple things. It's going to pick the route that you need to fly to avoid terrain features. You don't want to run into buildings, pylons, mountains, etc. You're going to pick the route, but you're also going to overlay it, the intelligence, that where enemy air defense systems are. You're going to go around that. Only we have this. Only we're capable of putting it all together into a target package that we designed. The Ukrainians can say this is the target we want to hit, but to hit that target, we have to build the target package. And then it gets sent encrypted, by the way. I know that's inconvenient, but it's sent encrypted on the ground to the people near the missile who aren't Ukrainians. They're not, because Ukrainians aren't allowed to be anywhere near this encryption. And then it gets loaded into this missile by these non-Ukrainian hands, probably hands that say made in Great Britain or made in America, because it's American targeting data, baby. We developed the target. And then it's loaded on and it's fired. To do a target like this, you need 24 to 48 hours minimum to plan. This isn't a spontaneous target. That means that the United States for 24 to 48 hours is planning a literal attack using a NATO weapon against Russian target. We're the parties to the conflict. And Vladimir Putin said, we know this. You say, well, how does he know it? Scott Ritter, you gave away national secrets. No, everything I just said is publicly. It's in the public domain. But the Russians have, just so you know, captured intact the ATACMS warhead to include the guidance. They found the port. They know what that port's for. It's where the targeting, the GPS encryption's put in, because they pulled out the chips and they were able to read it and they reverse engineer it and they got it all. They know everything. They captured intact the Storm Shadow. They know everything. They were able to reverse engineer it. They know this. So when Putin says, we know how this works, he's not guessing. He's not going off of open source intelligence. The Russians know this and confirmed it. He knows without a shadow of doubt that if that is used to hit a Russian target, an American or British hand touched it, it was planned in the United States, and he's not going to let that happen. We wouldn't let that happen. Imagine if Russia gave Mexico a bunch of missiles that Russia targeted, used Russian satellites, and gave it to the Mexicans, to the cartel or somebody, and said, hit Denver. And boom, Denver blows up. And Russia says, no, it was the Mexicans that did it. No, it wasn't. You did it. You gave them the weapon. You gave them the intelligence. You loaded it in. And you helped them fire it. We blame Russia. Well, that's what Russia just did. They blamed us. Rightfully so. You know, and Antonov made one of the final points, because the first thing is Putin said it. He said it on Thursday. That still wasn't good enough. Starmer showed up with the damn briefcase. They were going to sign these documents because they don't trust Putin. So the UN ambassador, the Russian ambassador UN in session, said this will be a declaration of war. And they still went, he's bluffing. Oh, he's bluffing, man. That's just bluff. Anatoly Antonov. I saw him Friday night. I went to the Russian embassy on Friday night to attend a cultural event, a piano concert of Rimsky-Korsakov and other Russian composers. Part of the ongoing effort of the Russian embassy to sort of, you know, show people the culture of Russia so that they say, well, maybe the Russians aren't just brutal savages. But he was sort of distracted and I would say not on his diplomatic game. Why? Because he had to give an interview prior to this on instructions from his government to tell the United States that if they sign off on this, remember, he's the Russian ambassador. He's responsible for the Russians in the United States, that Russia will attack the United States. Russia will attack the United States. That's the message he sent. Russia will attack the United States. And now you're the Russian ambassador at a cultural event going, I hope those bastards heard what I said. Because if they didn't, this all ends. I mean, and that didn't work. They still think he's bluffing. So I think one more phone call was made. And that's where the back channel was used. Thank God for the back channel. You know, the back channel saved our ass during a Cuban Missile Crisis. I think it saved our ass now because still we don't believe him. Anatoly Antonov said things before. We just say, well, he's the ambassador taking instructions. He's bluffing. The Russian ambassador to the United Nations has said things before. Just bluffing. Putin, just bluffing. Somebody made a phone call on Friday that said, we're not bluffing. And the phone call contained enough substance to convince the receiver that they weren't bluffing. Was this at the Pentagon level? Was this done at the CIA? I don't know. What I do know is there's somebody right now in the American media that knows this. But why aren't they saying this? This is information we the people need to know now. We need to know why Biden backed down. We need to know that Biden was shown evidence that said Russia will go to war against the United States if you do this. Why do we need to know that? So we understand the consequences the next time loudmouth and Zelensky starts begging for permission to use long-range missiles. We, the people that don't want to die, need to shout down, don't listen to him, get rid of him, disregard him. We're not going to die for Ukraine. We are not willing to die for Ukraine. I'm not putting my family's lives on the line for Ukraine. That isn't going to happen. This story will come out. Mark my words, sometime in December, January, before whoever got elected gets sworn in, if we're still alive, then somebody will release, you know, what happened, the inside story of how Biden backed down, you know, blah, 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 blah. But by then it won't matter. Now it matters. Right now it matters. We need to know this. Why did the president change his mind? We need to know that the Russians aren't bluffing. We need to know this so that all the pundits on American TV can be put on notice. Stop selling my death. I don't want to die. Not for Ukraine, not for Zelensky, not for this insanity that's going on in Europe today. And I hope everybody who's watching the show reaches the same conclusion. I don't want to die. You shouldn't want to die. Your family shouldn't have to die because of the stupidity of the West's approach to Ukraine. No matter where you stand on how this conflict started, I believe that Russia's on the right side of history, but you can say that Russia's not on the right side of history. What you have to understand is that Russia isn't losing this war. They're not going to. I mean, German Olaf Scholz got that signal from the head of Kazakhstan, who said Russia is militarily invincible right now. You're not going to beat them. But let's just break this down even further. Russia's a nuclear power. Its nuclear doctrine is built upon the premise that if the existential survival of Russia is put at risk, Russia will use its nuclear power to preserve and protect Russian survival. So your policy says, well, we're going to defeat Russia strategically. What part of Russia will use nuclear weapons to ensure that doesn't happen? Are you not understanding? So anybody who's sitting here saying that we're going to use Ukraine as a proxy conflict to bring about the strategic defeat of Russia is stupid, frankly speaking. And if their response is, well, Russia's bluffing. No, they're not. Biden just realized that. They're not bluffing. This is as real as it gets. This threat is real. It's existential in nature. Russia doesn't pose a threat to NATO. Russia's not going to invade NATO. Again, just think about this. How many troops has Russia had to put into the effort to recapture the Donbass? And how slow is that going? How difficult is it for Russia to assemble the forces necessary to recapture Kursk? And how slow is that going? These are hundreds of thousands of troops. Russia just enlarged its military. Putin signed off on it to about 1.5 million, an additional 600,000 troops. Why? Well, because Russia says there are threats, growing threats around our border that we need to have the troops to deal with defensively. Russia is not an offensive inclined power. They don't have the 12 million men needed to do large scale offensive operations against Europe. So all this nonsense about Russia will follow up its victory in Ukraine by going into Romania, going into, no, it's not. No, it's not. They don't have the military capacity to do this. Now, if Russia is attacked, Russia has the capacity to defend, and their defense is active in nature, which means they will take the fight to you. But that's a fight that you started, not Russia. Russia is not organized to initiate offensive military operations against NATO, and politically they're not inclined to do so. So we need to stop this nonsense about, you know, we have to hold on to Ukraine to defend Europe. If we don't fight them there, we're going to have to fight them here. That's a lie, a straight up lie. A straight up lie. So again, it's sad what's happening to Ukraine. I agree. But I believe it's Ukraine's fault and the West's fault for promoting this fight, to begin this fight. Didn't have to have a coup in 2014, didn't have to disregard Minsk, didn't have to ignore the Russian efforts in December 2021 for a new peace framework. You didn't have to do any of the things that we did. We didn't have to get in the way of the peace proposal that was ready to be implemented on April 1st, 2022. There are so many things we didn't have to do, but we did it, and we've lost. It's a failure. We're not going to win this war. It's done. There are 100,000 or more Ukrainians are going to die the longer this goes. You might kill a couple, maybe 100,000 more Russians. Yay. But you didn't win. Russia's not defeated. Ukraine will lose. That's the ultimate outcome. It's going to happen. Be adults about it. Accept a defeat and figure out how do we mitigate the consequences of this defeat to pursue a policy that doesn't result in nuclear war. And you can only do that by beginning to have negotiations with the Russians. So now we come back to the Iran. There's a wonderful op-ed written by RFK Jr. and Donald Trump Jr. Now people can say whatever they want about that. That you're missing the point. If your response is, well, that's RFK, you know, he's a vaccine guy, or he's this, or he's that, he's pro-Israel, you're missing the point. That just shows how stupid you are. I apologize for calling people stupid, but at this point, I almost died this past weekend because of your stupidity, so I don't care. You're stupid, really. And if that's Donald Trump Jr., he's the son, he's crazy, he's this, you're missing the point. What's the one thing that RFK Jr. and Donald Trump Jr. can do that you can't do? Talk to Donald Trump. You see, because ultimately it's only Donald Trump's opinion that matters when it comes to Trump world. Wouldn't it be nice if what they wrote reflects the thinking that might be going on inside Camp Trump, you know, when he's not getting assassinated or attempted assassination? What if Trump is actually thinking about how to bring an end to this war, how to prevent a nuclear war? I just want to remind you, we almost died past week because the current president's not thinking like that. And his handpicked candidate, Kamala Harris, isn't thinking like that. Now, what if Donald Trump is thinking like that? You're still going to say, well, I don't want to vote for Trump. Okay, it's not election day. But wouldn't it be nice to have one side say, I'm looking to prevent a nuclear war, and have people say, this is a very important issue because we don't want to die. And suddenly Kamala Harris goes, whoa, how'd this become an issue? How'd this become an issue? People are talking about something that we weren't even thinking. It wasn't on our radar. We're gonna have the most lethal military in the force, and we're going to continue to stand up to Putin. Her support goes down. She realizes the American people are serious about not having a nuclear war with Russia. And so she turns around and says, we got to change our policy. We got to mirror this, because she's done that before. You've seen she takes Trump's policies because they're popular and she makes them her own. So what if Kamala Harris made stopping a nuclear war her own policy? But now she has to do things. She has to turn to Biden and say, hey, you got to support me on this. Maybe send Blinken to Moscow. Maybe talk about New START treaty and how we can keep that alive. Maybe tone down the stupidity about long-range strike capabilities for Ukraine. Maybe tell Ukrainians that they lost the war and grow up and get the best possible degree. Do something, because this has become an issue that's going to play out on November 5th. And now we have two sides. And what if they get in a bidding war? Who's going to be the best to stop a nuclear war with Russia? And now they start going back and forth. Next thing you know, peace is broken out all over. It ain't a pretty path to it, but it's a hell of a lot better. I just want to again remind you, we almost died on Saturday. It's not a joke, people. It almost happened. If Biden had signed off on that piece of paper with Keir Starmer on Friday in the White House as he was planning to do, the paper that Carmer brought over in his little red box, you saw the photograph of him coming off the airplane carrying his little red official diplomatic communications, His Majesty's communications. That box contained the death warrant for you. For you. So stop being stupid about this. There's only one issue that matters come election day. Scott, Israel matters. Not if you're dead. Scott, abortion matters. Not if you're dead. Scott, my Second Amendment right. Not if you're dead. None of it matters if you're dead. And if there's a war between the United States and Russia, you're going to die. Stopping this war is the number one priority and has to be the number one priority of anybody who loves their country, loves their family, loves their kids, loves their dogs, loves going to the movie, loves enjoying life. Because if you had a good weekend, understand that you almost didn't. You were that close, one stroke of the pen for making that the worst weekend in your life. For many of you, it would have been a very short life because you would have died in a nuclear holocaust. For the rest of you, you'd have been praying that you died in a nuclear holocaust as you watch disease befall your family, the people that you love starve to death, die of disease, as you watch your communities fall apart into chaos and anarchy. You kill your neighbor to get the food in their refrigerator. You have to kill your dog and eat your dog because you're out of food or because you don't want to see your dog suffer. You have to leave your home because you can't live anymore and start trudging through this nuclear wasteland. That's your future, ladies and gentlemen. That's your future. It's not a game. It's as real as it gets. So why don't you do something to stop it by maybe saying, hey, the ideas that are in that op-ed piece published in The Hill by RFK Jr. and Donald Trump Jr., we may not agree with those two people individually, but we agree with the concept of doing what's necessary to stop a war. It's not a surrender to Russia. Russia's not threatening to do anything other than make us listen to Rimsky-Korsakov music. Okay, that's what I had to do Friday night. I'm a rock and roll guy, but I went to listen because I wanted to send a signal that it's okay to listen to Russian music. It's okay to meet with the Russians. They're good people. It's okay to be humans with Russians. That's a future that we can all accept. It's not about Russia occupying us, dominating us, winning against us. They don't want that. They're not seeking that. They just want to live peacefully with us in an environment that says they appreciate who we are. And we appreciate who they are. And there's no need for us to be killing one another. That's the world I want to live in.
Yeah. We've learned that we watched the interview that these two Russian pranksters did with Sikorsky. Did you watch it, Scott?
Did I watch what?
The interview that these two Russian pranksters did with Sikorsky.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched all their interviews. I've actually been on their show and I've interviewed them myself on my podcast. These are remarkable individuals. They claim to be pranksters. I'm telling you right now, the impact that they have on informing the public about the truth that these people don't want them to see, they're having a better impact than the Russian intelligence service, which leads me to believe that maybe they're actually secret Russian intelligence services agents. And yeah, because they're doing amazing things. It's called a prank. But, you know, a prank is sort of harmless. What does Sikorsky say? I mean, he acknowledged that Nord Stream 2 was attacked, probably by the United States. He said that at a minimum, we knew about it. And we did nothing to stop it. I mean, this is a dangerous, dangerous man, Sikorsky. And he's saying things right now that you have people in the Polish government that are talking about prosecuting him for violating the secrecy acts, that he was saying things that were classified. He thought he was talking to Poroshenko, his fellow, anti-Russian conspirator. He's talking to two Russian pranksters, but they weren't pranksters. These guys were exposing the truth. We can laugh about it. They did the same thing to Mike Pompeo. They've done it to just about everybody. And we can laugh about how clever, but listen to what they're exposing, the truths they're exposing. And you realize that we're being lied to 24/7 by our respective governments, whether it's the Polish government, the American government, the British government. They are incapable of trusting their citizens with the truth. Because if they were, then it wouldn't be the prank. Prank wouldn't work because they'd be finding out things that were already told to the general audience. Why is this important? Well, here in the United States, we have the U.S. government using the courts to attack free speech. I mean, they're coming after me. We just had a trial in Florida of the Uhura 3. One of the things that came out of that was the definition of disinformation. And that's an important term. You saw that Hillary Clinton used it in her interview with Rachel Maddow. We have to defeat misinformation. We have to defeat disinformation. And most people sit there and go, well, I mean, after all, shouldn't we support truth over lies? Sure. But what if the government's definition of disinformation has nothing to do with truth? What if the government's definition of disinformation is anything that deviates from the official narrative set forth by the government? And that's the definition that the U.S. courts embraced. Anything that deviates from the official narrative set forth by the U.S. government is disinformation. Just so you understand, let's put this in historical context. You were telling me before we went live that you saw an ABC interview about me in the lead up to the war and how I was saying that there was no weapons of mass destruction, etc. Truth. Historical truth. We now know it. Even the people that didn't believe me then are saying, well, gotcha, you were right then. Okay, God, we'll give you that. That's disinformation. It's not the truth. See, I was guilty of disinformation. And if we had in place laws that said anybody who dares speak about, put out disinformation needs to be silenced, maybe criminally silenced, then the truths I was trying to tell to stop this war, I wouldn't have been allowed to say it because it's disinformation. That's the danger that we're in right now. Free speech is under attack. I mean, just take a look at some of the insanity that's going on. Meta, the former Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, has now yielded to pressure from the U.S. government to silence RT. He shut down Instagram in India because of the because of the concerns that they were promoting a Russian pro-Russian narrative, and he's now shut down Russia on Meta on Facebook. I mean, this isn't free speech. You can say, well, I don't agree with the Russian narrative. Fine, don't agree with it. Come up with a better narrative. Come up with a better point of view. But once you start suppressing free speech, it's over. The constitutional republic we call America is finished. And it's not me saying that. John F. Kennedy warned about this in April of 1961 in a speech he gave before the American Press Association. He said that, I might not be happy with what you write, but you have every right to, not just a right to write it, you have a duty. You have a duty to hold me to account, to criticize me, because from criticism, better decisions are made. And yet today we're not allowed to criticize. We're not allowed to question. We're not allowed to do our duty as American citizens. Now, I know there's a lot of foreigners out there that say, well, Scott, free speech, like in Russia, they say, well, we don't have free speech. You're Russia. That's okay. That's your business, not mine. China, I don't care. That's your business, not mine. America has free speech. It's one of the fundamental cornerstone rights we have as American citizens that helps define what this constitutional republic is. It helps make American democracy function. And when you remove free speech from this equation, we are no longer a constitutional republic. We are no longer the United States. We may call ourselves the United States, but we cease to function as the United States. And that's an outcome that I personally don't want to see. And so I think it's imperative that we allow all voices to be heard, that we respect ourselves and empower ourselves with the ability to discern between good argument and bad argument. Sound facts and not so sound facts. It's a duty and responsibility that we all enjoy. And again, I just want to bring this full circle. We almost died this weekend. Why? Because many of us accept at face value the narrative being put forward by our government. And we view our efforts or anybody's efforts to challenge that narrative as not only counterproductive, but un-American. No. We almost died this last weekend because our government is promulgating policies based upon misperceptions, deceptions, of the threat posed by Russia. We almost died this weekend because our government is lying to us. We have a duty and responsibility to expose these lies and to challenge these lies and compel our government to either change its policies or elect people that are capable of changing those policies. It's not interference in the American election to challenge these policies. It's not disinformation. It's what every American is supposed to do. When you have people whom we've elected to higher office to represent us, we have to hold them to account. And you can't hold them to account if your voice is silenced.
And one of the points that Sir Sikorsky mentioned in this interview, he said that Ukraine can be part of the EU, but in the next 10, 20 years. I think, which was one of the reasons that in his visit to Kiev, he had some sort of serious disagreements with Zelensky, because Zelensky was talking about that Poland is not doing enough in favor of Ukraine to be part of the EU. And we had the same, we've heard the same kind of rhetoric from the new foreign minister of Ukraine, Ukraine being part of the EU. Do you think in the current situation of this country, Ukraine, is that possible for the EU to let them in? And no. Just Poland is not agreeing on that?
No, Ukraine can't be a member of the EU. Ukraine will never be a member of the EU. I mean, the fact is, if the EU allowed Ukraine in, it would be the end of the EU. And it's just not going to happen. Ukraine doesn't meet any of the criterion required to be a member of the EU. It's totally incompatible. Every aspect of Ukraine is incompatible with the values that the EU claims that it embraces. It's economically, it's a wreck. It doesn't meet any of the economic requirements to be a member of the EU. It never will meet them. Ukraine's a destroyed nation. But this, again, this is part of the danger of this fantasy of Ukrainian membership in the EU, just like Ukrainian membership in NATO. I mean, you have, Biden, Ukraine will be a member of NATO. Blinken, Ukraine will be a member of NATO. Stoltenberg, Ukraine will be a, no, it's not. It never will be. Isn't going to happen. Forget about it. It's just fantasy. It's the kind of stupidity linked to bad policy that has to be promulgated because you can't admit that you've made a mistake. That's it. And as long as we allow Volodymyr Zelensky to parade around, in the form of the Ukrainian president, even though his term has expired, he has no legitimacy. He's being challenged not just by the Russians, but by his own party, or opposition party. His own people are going to the court saying, get him out of there. He's not the president. He has no legitimacy. As long as we allow this guy to parade around and we wrap him with the mantle of legitimacy, we're going to have these kinds of discussions, which aren't conducive. Let's clear the air. Let's start off, imagine if we had a discussion where we said, Ukraine isn't going to be a member of the EU. Ukraine isn't going to be a member of NATO. And Ukraine has lost this war and isn't going to win this war. What are we going to do about it? Changes everything, doesn't it? Suddenly you're realistic and you go, well, we need to bring an end to this war and salvage what we can of Ukraine and I guess promote neutrality and see what we can do to rebuild Ukraine so that it can function as a neutral member of the broader European global community. Okay, now we're talking. But as long as we put forward these absurdities, Ukraine's going to be a member of the EU. How? You can't articulate how that's going to happen. Ukraine's going to be a member of NATO. How? Russia will never allow that. Well, we're going to strategically defeat Russia. How are you going to do that without Russia destroying you with nuclear weapons? Well, I don't want to talk about that. We need to become real. We need to be very real about these, the facts. And the facts are Ukraine has lost this war. They're not going to win this war. They're never going to be a member of the EU. They're never going to be a member of NATO. You start with that, the solution starts to write itself.
When you look at the conflict so far in Ukraine, do you find the Kursk incursion as a turning point for the conflict?
A turning point occurred long before that. Kursk is just the last act. Look, the turning point of World War II, the war between between Nazi Germany and the Alliance, was the Battle of Kursk in 1943. At that point in time, Germany exhausted its strategic reserves. It had no ability to reconstitute these reserves, and the war was irretrievably lost. And yet Germany was able to launch an attack, the Battle of the Bulge, just this offensive in a desperate attempt to change the outcome of the battle on the Western Front. You can't call the Battle of the Bulge a turning point in the war. The war was already lost by the time that was fought. Kursk is not a turning point in the war. It's the last desperate act by a nation that has strategically lost this conflict. They committed their strategic reserves into this Kursk offensive. The offensive is stalled, and now the Ukrainians are being slaughtered, wiped out, annihilated. And in doing so, they made the war actually shorter. Just like, you know, we don't know how much longer Germany could have survived if it didn't sacrifice thousands of tanks, you know, a tremendous amount of ammunition, artillery, and manpower. What could they have done with a more mobile reserve on the Western Front to stop the deep penetrations? Could they have diverted that sum to slow down the Russian advance, in Prussia? Could they've extended the war into, instead of, you know, finishing in early May, could they have lasted another month, June? Could they have taken it to July? Could they have taken it to August? Probably. They still would have lost. They weren't going to win. But by expending those reserves, sacrificing on the battlefield, they made it impossible to hold on the East. Look at that movie Downfall, when Hitler's, you know, where's Steiner? Let's move this army. Where's the Ninth Army? How come they're not doing this? Well, they didn't exist. What if they did exist? He still would have lost the battle, but he could have blocked. They could have done this. They could have evacuated. They could have done things. Those options were taken away because the strategic reserve was squandered in the Ardennes offensive. The Ukrainian strategic reserve is squandered in the Kursk offensive. Now they've eliminated possibilities. Later on, Zelensky might be down in a bunker going, where's Sirsky? Where's this? Where's this? Where's that? They don't exist. Boss, you send them to Kursk and they're all dead. And we got nothing left and the Russians have broken through. That's the reality of what's going on right now.